Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Invested. I'm Danielle Towne, and I have a bronchial infection that is causing me to cough so badly that I've actually bruised my ribs internally, which I didn't even know was possible. Because of that, I've been trying to get through an episode recording, and I can't get more than 5 minutes without just having to stop it and cough like crazy. So rather than subject you guys to this, and I'm trying not to cough right now, my dad and I decided that what we should do is put up a really interesting episode from our vault. It's from mid-2017. It's on the disruption of the grocery industry and all the stuff that was going on then with Amazon and Whole Foods. And it's so interesting to listen back to it. I just was listening and have the year and a half or so of perspective and information that we have now on everything we said back then. It's really cool investing practice because so much of investing practice is being ruthless in our judgments and looking back honestly and being able to say, oh, I screwed up on that thing. So here's how I'm going to change it in the future. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to play this episode today. And then next week, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about all the stuff we said then and whether or not we were right. So check it out. I hope you enjoy it. Happy Hanukkah. And we'll be back next week. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. This is Phil Towne.
And this is Danielle Towne.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast, where we're trying to figure out exactly how to get you all investing like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger and me. And I'm teaching Danielle, my daughter. And we've been doing this long enough where I sort of think like it might be time to dive into a real, real amazing world example deeper than we've ever done before.
Yes. So we are breaking into our regularly scheduled programming, as we are wont to do from time to time, Dad, because I know we promised to move on to management. But today, we're recording this on Monday, August 28th, and today the Amazon Whole Foods deal closed.
It closed.
So Amazon now owns Whole Foods.
It closed, and Amazon, Jeff Bezos immediately threw a bomb into the grocery store world. Very, very interesting. So the whole thing.
And we got to talk about it because we've been following this deal, obviously personally, because I owned Whole Foods. And then we've been following the deal process itself. And so we've got to just talk about it today because it's so exciting and there's all this news around it.
And it really brings up some very, very good examples of why moat is so important, why we are looking for those companies which have, as Charlie says, an intrinsic characteristic that protects them from competition. And it's a durable intrinsic characteristic. And you got to look at these possibilities for companies and say, okay, these guys, you know, they obviously know who they are. I know who they are. So they're a brand, you know, but is that enough? Is a brand moat enough to give you a durable characteristic that will keep you in business for a long, long time? Because here's
the thing. So what you're saying is these grocery stores, they don't, so the moat, this thing that protects you from your competition, you're saying these grocery stores don't really have one except for their name and what that name implies to everybody about what kind of experience they're going to have in their stores, right?
Right, which is why we really should talk about this as a great example for one particular kind of moat, which we see all the time out there, which is a brand moat, right? So this is a Coca-Cola, uses a brand moat to protect itself, and Harley Davidson has a brand moat to protect itself, and so you know, so does Abercrombie and Fitch. So, you know, so does True Religion Jeans. In other words, if you've heard of them, they have a brand. Now, the question is whether that's a moat, right? Whether that's
like whether moat. That's actually a competitive advantage,
right? It is.
That's durable.
That's durable. That's durable. That's the key thing. And so, Let's think for a second before we dive into Amazon. Let's think for a second why having a durable moat is so important. What do you think?
Well, if it's not durable, it can be easily breached, and therefore the company can easily go down like a brick as soon as some better competitor shows up.
Right. And what that means is, if we keep following that, is that it's very difficult for us to figure out what the future cash flow of this business would look like. What would this business be worth in 10 years if we don't know if it's going to be there in 10 years?
As far as like a rule number one analysis perspective, how do I make sure that my numbers, my projections are actually reliable without some durability there?
I mean, we're gonna discount our projection by 50% to make sure we're not in a position where we have to be really accurate with the numbers. But still, we want to have a pretty good confidence that we're going to be able to sell this business for something in 10 years that's more than what we paid for it today.
Yeah.
If we don't have any confidence that the business will really be a strong business in 10 years, then how do we figure out what it's worth?
Well, you can't / it's not worth a lot.
Okay, very good. You can't / okay, it's not worth a lot. And so one of the ways, I mean, just continuing to wind down the rabbit hole, one of the ways we could price a company where we can't really know for sure where it's going to be in 10 years, and it's perhaps not worth a lot, is we could look at its book value, right? We could say, well, okay, it's worth what it would be worth today as a zombie. It's walking around, but it's dead. And you just sell off everything it owns, and you pay off all of the debt, and what's left is what it's worth.
Yeah. Okay, but what are we talking about here? What does this have to do with Whole Foods and Amazon?
The larger picture. It's the larger picture.
Give me the larger picture.
Okay, well, the larger picture is that Amazon purchased Whole Foods immediately today, cut prices in stores. Now, we've only got data coming in from New York right now because they're not even open probably in California. But the data from New York looks like Amazon is cutting the price of fresh produce, like avocados and so on, by 30 to 40% immediately.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. They are not messing around. Jeff Bezos.
For a whole paycheck, that's a lot.
That's a lot. So avocados have just gone from like $3 to $2. Unbelievable. And I don't think it's just like, oh, on sale for Monday. I think Bezos is going to put them there, and that's where they're going to be.
Well, I mean, that's how Amazon has competed in all of its businesses since its inception, essentially. They undercut all the brick and mortar booksellers initially on price, and then they did it on everything else they sold, and now they're doing it on groceries, it seems. Even for such a high-end grocery seller like Whole Foods, which... So maybe this is why you were talking about brand, because Whole Foods' brand is that of being a fairly expensive grocery store.
High quality,
yeah,
really good quality, really huge variety and choices in there, and all focused with an idea on the values of Whole Foods, which are very specific about natural food going toward organic and leading the parade, right?
Yeah, that's all true. And expensive.
and expensive. And so what would happen if you had that huge brand, which is the cutting edge and has been the leading company in this really sort of secular move that's going on? It's a permanent move, shifting to more high quality food. And all of a sudden, they could compete on price with all the crap that gets sold everywhere else. Oh, my goodness. What would people do?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I mean, the answer is they can't compete on price or else they would have done it already. So that tells me that Amazon's taking a loss on their or is planning to take a loss on their food. I mean, it's like what Amazon, again, it's the same thing they've done with so many other things. Like, what's that little like sort of bot thing that you buy and you put in your house and you can talk to it and say things like, order me paper towels.
Oh, yeah, Amazon thing. Melissa was showing me that thing the other day.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. Like, yeah. Google has one and Apple has one. Everybody has one now.
Yeah.
They have that thing available for, like, nothing. I mean, they're taking a total loss on it, and it's because they want to get it into everybody's home. And the, like, their e-reader, I also forget what that's called. that they sell for like $50 and it should be, you know, a couple hundred. They just take a loss on everything. That's how they do it. And that's how they have slowly and steadily taken over the world. So yeah, I think that's what they're doing with grocery.
It is what they're doing with groceries, except that it may not be quite as horrible in terms of losing money as that would indicate. If Whole Foods, in fact, could have cut price, but didn't for reasons to protect their margins, which were the by far the highest in the grocery industry. So this is real important to know, I think, when you're looking at a business, is that the margins on a business are how much money that business makes when it sells mm-hmm. something. You know, mm-hmm. what part of that is profit? So you'd say, oh, well, you know, they have, 20% profit or on that particular thing that they're selling there, or 30% profit or 50% profit. And so Whole Foods is famous for having very, very high margins for a grocery store. Most grocery stores have almost no margin at all. I'm talking about 1% here. They're barely profitable. And here you have Whole Foods that's making money and printing money, right? And they're saying, look, you want to come in here, you want to buy this stuff. We're the only guys around that you can get it from. So you got to pay.
All right. I mean, I think Whole Foods used that margin for in other ways different than other grocery stores. And that's why they did it.
Well, yeah.
But I don't think that they particularly wanted to be known as Whole Paycheck. I don't think it was like
no, they didn't.
Mackey's
but I think
greatest John, ambition.
John
I don't
Mackey,
think it was an important part of their brand. I think being low cost would have been somewhat opposite to their brand, but being like average cost would have been perfectly good for them.
Well, kind of what a moat allows you to do is to have good profit margins. That's one of the signs of a moat. And one of the ways we score a company on our toolbox is to just look and see, does it have these margins? And if it has these margins over a long period of time, like a decade, we give it a good score because it's an indication that they have pricing power. And that's one of the most important things about a moat. I was listening to Warren Buffett talk about this a little bit when he was talking about Coca-Cola, where he said the power of a brand like Coca-Cola is that they have this pricing power. They can raise their price with inflation, and you're going to buy the product even in deflation because you want the product. So they have enormous pricing power that comes from their moat. So he just ran some numbers really quickly. He said that Coca-Cola, for example, has 18 billion servings a day with a B. If you raise the price of Coca-Cola
a day.
If you raise it 1 cent, it's $18 million of pure profit a day.
Wow.
And if you did it over the course of a year, you would add $6.5 billion to your bottom line. So he said that's what makes Coca-Cola more valuable than Joe's Cola, is that Joe's Cola has no pricing power and Coca-Cola has enormous pricing power. And so when we're looking at moat, we want to look at that idea. Are there good margins and do they have pricing power? So here's to the point is that Whole
Foods. So are you saying this is ruining Whole Foods' moat?
No, not at all. I think it's going to increase. Whole Foods has a brand moat, and I think to a certain degree they have a secrets moat, to tell you the truth.
What's their secrets moat?
I haven't read about it in their 10K for a long time, a lot of years, but years ago when they were first getting rolling, John Mackey, the CEO then and founder, said, we know how to calculate our produce, our fresh produce, better than anybody in the world. We have a system and we have a secret that says we know how to put all this stuff out there, keep it beautiful, have more of it than anybody, and not lose money on it because it's an expiring asset, right? It goes away in a very short period of time. And if you don't control your inventory, then you don't have good margins. But we have good margins because we know how to control that inventory. So John was making the case that Whole Foods knows things about fresh produce that nobody else knows how to do.
And it's true. I mean, and they do have, we'll see. It's going to be really interesting to see if the stores change at all besides the prices in the next few weeks. See if there's any like on the floor changes right away.
You know what I'd be looking at is whether the people are changing over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
That's where you'll see
if they're happier, happy, right. less happy. Because, right. I mean, Amazon isn't exactly known for having incredibly happy employees. It's going to be, it's going to be very interesting.
And Whole Foods is known for
any of you guys
really
work for Whole
employees.
Foods, send us emails. Tell us how it's going.
We'd love to know how you're doing out
Questions
there.
@investedpodcast.com. We would love to know.
And I think the initial impact on employees is going to be very positive because they know that there's blowback on prices. There's always been blowback on prices at Whole Foods. It goes all the way back to the founding when Mackie and his wife were building the company. They lived upstairs in an apartment. And they had all, and Mackie at the time was a raving socialist, right? He's a complete radical socialist. And he had all of his socialist friends complaining to him that his prices, he was such a capitalist pig because his prices were so high, he should sell the things to the people for a very good price. This is when Mackie and his wife were making $200 a month between them, profit in the store, and barely staying alive above their store. And so he got really irritated at this whole notion that you could somehow know how to run a business based on what you should be doing for the people. And he sort of left socialism and became, a radical libertarian. And as now, basically trying to move the world, but do it as a profitable company. And that's what he's done to this point.
Go ahead.
And then now what's happened is, of course, companies like Walmart and Costco have used their buying power to come in and threaten that moat, which is the natural organic food moat, and do so with low prices. And so this has forced him to jump into the arms of a white knight, Jeff Bezos, who is going to, I'm sure John believes, is going to keep the culture going at Whole Foods if he possibly can.
I think he
can.
Does think that. So there was a really interesting, remember we were talking a few times about how we wanted to know what happened in the background deal. We were guessing. Right. And there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, which my friend Todd sent me. Hi, Todd. Thanks for listening. Todd's a fantastic listener and sent this to me, and I had missed it somehow. And this tells the story of what happened in the background of the deal. And it's so interesting because I read this article and I seriously, Dad, I wouldn't say this if it weren't true. I was thinking to myself, did my dad read this article already when we were talking about it on the podcast?
This is my secret. I have time travel skills.
I was like, did this come out a couple of weeks ago? And it's just, he read it and didn't tell me. Cause you basically totally called it. I mean, very impressive, Dad. Really, very impressive.
Thank you, honey. We should send the URL over so people, a link over, and put it on our website so you can link to the article.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Yeah, you've got to pay for Wall Street Journal, I think, to read it. But it's called, at least online, it's called Six Other Potential Suitors Approached Whole Foods Before Amazon Deal. So what Dad suggested back a few weeks ago was that he thought that Mackie had probably reached out to Jeff Bezos and wanted Amazon to buy them. And I thought, I could see it happening, but I don't know if he would really want Amazon, the behemoth of Amazon, to be owning his company. But then when you read this, I started to think, considering other options, it makes a lot of sense. And so Dad was totally right. He reached out to Amazon. There were, as the headline said, six other companies expressing interest. And I'm sure those other companies were not particularly palatable to John Mackie because he reached out to Amazon, started just discussing an acquisition, and a few others showed up. And eventually a different company, which they don't name, offered $35 to $40 per share to buy Whole Foods. And Whole Foods was basically like, screw you, hell no. Mm-hmm. And then Amazon offered $41. And Dad, you had said, I don't remember the exact number you said, but you said somewhere around 40, I think, seemed reasonable from a buyer perspective. And somewhere around 45 seemed reasonable from a seller perspective. And they ended up at 42 per share. So Amazon, you were just so right. Amazon, and by the way, I love this like behind the deal stuff because I'm a deal lawyer and it's just so fun to read like, oh, then this person talked to this person. And it's like total business gossip to me.
And it's so fun to see how it's not that difficult to be thinking in terms of a management team, right? When you're looking at buying companies, you want to have a really good management team. Well, when you're looking to sell your company to somebody, and that's going to be the future of your company, you want to have a really good management team that matches up with your value set. And that's when I was fairly sure that Mackey was probably going to be the guy to step over to Bezos, because he would be looking at someone who has it in his heart to really change the world in a positive way. And the other offer was coming in from Albertsons.
No, they don't say that.
Yeah. There is an yep.
The general reporting Friday. One of the other suitors was Albertsons. Yeah.
And so Albertsons has gone bankrupt in the past, having its CEO run off with $20 or $30 million, and now is back from the dead. And they probably have a really good management team that's trying really hard to move the company forward into the future, but they don't have a track record of being disruptors, of being people who are out to create a great future for the world, you know. And that's Bezos. So I didn't see that, and I'm sure he doesn't want to just go to a hedge fund that wants to, you know, strip it down, pound up its profits, and take it back public again. I mean, yeah, I couldn't see that happening.
So painful.
Yeah. So Bezos seemed a really good match to me, and it looks like Goldman Sachs was handling a lot of this, and they probably thought the same thing. Went straight over to Amazon.
It's really interesting from an investing perspective to think about this when you have a company that is run by its founder or is run by, let's say, like a family office that, you know, has a deep stake in the company. It's something that you've taught me to look for in a company I want to invest in, but it's also something to think about as those people start to think about selling, that they're going to be more careful often, not always, but often be more careful with who they sell their baby to. You know, it's something that's been part of their family, something they nurtured from the beginning a lot of times, and they care about what happens to it. And that really makes a difference in a sale, because often it's not, you know, let's say one company offers $41 per share and the other company offers $42 per share, but you know that the $41 offer is going to come with a much better future down the road. You could make a good case for that to a board of directors. So I think that's really important to think about as investors looking at companies that might sell one day. I think that's something we should keep in mind.
I agree totally. And we're gonna dive into management. We keep promising we will. And it's so important. Yeah. But I want to bring back this conversation to the moat issue, because what happened when Amazon came out with this price cut is that the public prices of stock of other competitive companies just started to fall rapidly. And so this is just over in the last 3 days of trading, okay? 3 days. Sprouts Farmers Market, which is symbol SFM, dropped 14% of their entire market value, and the whole grocery industry lost $12 billion of market value in 3 days. Just because of this initiative by Bezos. I mean, it's huge. Super Value stores dropped 10%. Kroger dropped 6%. This is 6% in 3 days, okay? We don't know where this is going to stop. And I think the market is going to be watching very closely as, you know, Costco even, Target even is get hit a little. Walmart got hit a little. But obviously, anybody that's going out there to try to compete on the basis purely of price in purely the grocery industry, which, and particularly in the organic natural food industry like Sprouts, they're going to get pounded.
That's tough. Yeah.
I don't think really I'd want to be a Sprouts owner right now. And that's to the point of a moat. So if Sprouts has a durable competitive advantage, what is it? How do you prevent competition from coming in and wreaking havoc on your marketplace? How would you do that if you're a Sprouts owner? I mean, you just look at this and just go, well, any place Whole Foods decides to put a store, we're screwed because we're not going to be able to compete on price.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been in enough Sprouts to really have a sense of the customer experience, but I know that they exist in a lot of places Whole Foods exists. Like, they compete against each other in a lot of markets already. Mm-hmm. So are they competing on price?
No.
Maybe.
They weren't then, but they will now. In other words, if Whole Foods can deliver...
No, I mean, were they offering natural foods just like Whole Foods was, but at a lower price?
Oh, gotcha.
And I think generally they were a lower priced store than Whole Foods overall.
Right.
But I'm not sure how much lower. Like, I'd be curious to find out what they are compared to these new lower prices that Whole Foods is rolling out.
I agree. And so what is so the moat that we're talking about is sort of a price moat potential, which is what Super Value tries to stand in there with, you know, Walmart, Walmart stores, Costco. Those guys have price moats, right? So when you buy product A and you can get the exact same product A, but a lot cheaper, then you go there. And of course, Amazon is famous for disrupting these great big box stores who have been competing on price. And they compete with lower prices and, you know, they've done an incredible thing. So now you've got these grocery stores that you think like Sprouts would have some kind of a moat. Well, what's the moat, you know? Is a brand moat enough to be able to carry you through and make you durable when you've got somebody coming in to disrupt on price with the same quality, even better reputation, even better brand?
Well, and I think you just said the key, the same quality.
Yeah.
That's the key, because what Whole Foods has offered and what you've been calling brand moat is the customer experience of really dedicated employees who really know a lot about food and care about it and are experts in their fields.
Right.
It's the quality of the produce, of the products that you know that if something has made it into Whole Foods, it comes from a good place. It's probably sustainable. It's, you know, they haven't hurt the environment horribly by creating this product.
Right.
And that, knowing that, I mean, that's honestly, that's a lot of the reason I go to Whole Foods is that I know I won't waste my time sorting through a bunch of crappy stuff I'm not going to buy. I know that I would be willing to buy pretty much everything on those shelves. So now with lower prices, can they still provide those things? And we'll just have to see, or does it drag the whole thing down into some sort of mass market?
Well, let's make a couple of assumptions as business analysts for Rule One style business buyers.
Okay,
let's just assume, for example, that Bezos is smart enough to not break the moat. Okay, so he's not going to destroy his own moat.
Let's assume that.
So we're going to understand that quality will stay the same, and that Bezos will use the entire rest of the power of Amazon's cash flow to dominate this market. And that means if you own Sprouts right now, SFM, you've got to be looking at exiting that position because the story has changed. So if you're an owner of Sprouts and your story is, we are also a brand and we are competing with price with Whole Foods because we can source cheaper, and that's why we've got a price moat. And it might turn out that Sprouts cannot source cheaper, which means it does not have a price moat, which means that they can be undercut by a company that has bigger reach, like an Amazon.
And the ability to take losses, like an Amazon.
And those guys can, basically, you just got to pray that Amazon doesn't bring something into your neighborhood, because otherwise you're not going to be successfully competing with that company. They can take you out every place you are. So that looks like a very difficult proposition for a company that needs to grow in order to keep its current market value. Man, I'll tell you what, that looks like a long-term break in the brand at Sprouts to me. And
I think this is a real rupture in grocery. I think we're seeing the change today. Today is the change.
Yeah, I think this is it. I'd mark it down in the grocery industry that this is when This is when it got disrupted, and this is what is going to throw Walmart into a tizzy, Costco into the tizzy, as they were starting to step pretty effectively into the sort of natural food organic net market.
Oh, Dad, Costco's organic stuff is so good. When was the last time you were in a Costco?
Have you ever been in a Costco? Once.
You've never been in a Costco.
They don't have one down here.
Okay, so the answer is you've never been in a Costco.
I went to one once a million years ago in Bellevue,
sure,
Washington.
Sure you did. Sure you did. It was really just a big Walmart and you got confused. Costco is amazing, and it's a totally different thing. To me, they are, I know they're both in grocery, but you go to Costco for different stuff than you go to Whole Foods for. So I wouldn't put those in the same category.
Okay. And then, you know me, I'm always happy to see somebody pounding away at Walmart's moat.
Yeah.
Just because I'm so, what they've done.
Well, I think they're going directly for Walmart with this.
Good. I like that.
I mean, my mom, as you know, lives in a very rural area, and she has told me that everybody she knows orders groceries from Walmart.com.
Wow.
And because they just don't have good grocery options, and the stuff from Walmart is so much less expensive than what they have, and people there don't have a lot of money and they are buying entirely on price, and so they order from Walmart. And if Amazon can get into that part of the world, into that those buyers, I think, yeah, it's going to change everything.
I guess the world's going to change in ways that we can't stop. I'll tell you, just as somebody that really loves the idea of the sort of ethics of small town living, where your income and expenditures become somebody else's income in that small town. And the problem is when everybody's ordering stuff from some, you know, outlandishly international company, you're beggaring your neighbor. Is really what happens.
Completely. That's why there's a whole push to like buy local and support your local stores.
And so people, I mean, we do it to save a buck, and I understand that. But if your neighbor is saving a buck and it costs you your job because you can no longer work at the local pharmacy or the local clothing store, or you can no longer support your living as a lawyer, or you can no longer be the insurance agent. I'm telling you, and that happens through all these small towns because of these big box stores and now because of Amazon.
It does, yeah.
And the next big wave is going to be what we would look back into the 30s. In 1935, the Congress passed a law, I think it's called the REA law. It's about the rural electrification. And what they did is they took tax dollars and they pushed electricity out into rural counties that otherwise there would be no economic reason to do so.
Yeah.
And what I think's coming, what's got to come for these small towns, if people want to live in small towns, is the rural 1 gigabyte broadband spectrum fiber optics. We're going to have to pay for that as taxpayers and shove that out all across America. And when that happens, then these rural towns can indeed compete with downtown to attract new kinds of businesses.
You're so right.
They're just not going to be able to hang on with what used to support the town square.
The information gap right now between lower income areas and higher income areas is scary, especially for kids coming up who really need to have access to the internet, be readily available, and they don't have it. And for those of us who have it on the regular and live our lives basically on the internet, we can't even imagine life without it. And yet there are lots of people who simply don't have it or have to go to their local library to get it, and local libraries are dying. I mean, you're exactly right. That's the next spot that's going to come into changing rural life.
Yeah, so if you're a politician or you know politicians, tell them to get off their butts and get that rolling, because that's something everybody in this country could get behind, you know, getting that kind of broadband power out into the poor neighborhoods and out into the rural neighborhoods is the equivalent of putting electricity out there, you know, 170 years ago. So, yeah.
And so for investing, because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
What I say to myself when we talk about something like that is, I got to keep that in mind. You know, like that's what's coming. I got to look, as you always say, to look 10 years into the future or 20 years into the future. That's what's coming. And how do I set up my own, not even investing portfolio, but like where I'm putting my money, my support. Where am I putting my support financially in this world?
And if that sounds hard, it is. So I'm not sure I totally agree with you on that.
What?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in principle and I agree with you emotionally. But as an investor, I understand that if we're looking at something that's going to change the whole world, the question I want to ask is it going to change the way people chew gum, right? Or is it going to change the way people, you know, enjoy a burrito? Is it going to change those things? And if the answer is no, then I'm feeling much safer as an investor. It's very hard to pick the companies that are going to be the winners 20 years later in a seismic shift of society. What's a lot easier is to pick the companies that are not going to be affected at all by that psychic shift of society. And if we can do that, we can be very, very good investors. And we can simply wait to buy those on sale at the next recession, which is something we're going to enjoy sometime pretty soon.
I think that's a really good point, that picking companies now that are not going to get affected by imaginary future stuff is where to go right now. But what I didn't really mean particular companies, because you're right, like who knows what companies are even going to be around in 20 years. I meant more like industries, general shifts, where to be looking. Like I'm not really going to look too much at grocery. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And you may be watching carefully if you want to look at restaurants, because Amazon's acquisition of Whole Foods is the acquisition of a company that's pretty good at delivering restaurant food.
Oh, so good.
It is so good. I mean, you go over to a Whole Foods, they've got like four different kinds of food preparation stations, everything from pizza to Chinese food, and not to mention the giant servings of salads and all of that. And this all competes against restaurants as well. So if I can have somebody from Amazon's delivery system bring over dinner, then that's one night I don't go out to the restaurant. So this is a very disruptive moment right here. Very, very disruptive. So absolutely, you want to be looking in areas that are easy to understand and that are going to be around and be unaffected by these amazing shifts in the way we live. And that's what we want to be invested in.
So what I want to know about is looking forward. You want to pick companies that aren't going to change at all, but I'm a little more interested in companies that might change. And what I want is a John Mackey style, not that you can ever find another one like him, but that kind of style of deeply invested CEO founder type. And I want to know about management. So can we get back to that next time?
No. Because I want to talk about another incredibly amazing series of events that happened with Chipotle Mexican Grill and the norovirus. And it's just amazing. In my view, something that put this company on sale big time. And okay, if we can get through that quickly, we can then go to management. I'm with you 100%.
Do you know people like ask me, why are you guys so obsessed with Chipotle? And I'm like... We're not obsessed with Chipotle. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then I realize how much we talk about Chipotle.
I know. I started writing about it in my first book like 11 years ago. And I was buying it at $55 a share. So, yeah. There's a bit of a thing I've got with Chipotle.
I think there's a point at which we just have to admit that, fine, we like Chipotle a lot. Everybody can just deal with it.
And also, it's just been such a great example on so many ways. So I think it's a great example, again, of the power of a real moat, which can control price. And let's talk about that a little bit next time. And then on to management, I promise.
Yes, we'll get back to what we meant to talk about, I promise.
Exactly. Okay, until then, I guess it's time to go play. What do you think?
Yeah? All right. Thanks, everybody. Go visit Whole Foods. Let us know what happens.
Thanks, you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Invested. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Head over to investedpodcast.com for our show notes and a special offer on how the podcast listeners can attend my 3-day transformational investing workshop for free, where we just teach the heck out of you for 3 straight days. We don't sell anything, and we get you a scholarship to come to it for free. So come on over there and take a look at that. And by the way, as our lawyers want me to say. Everything discussed on this podcast is either my opinion or Danielle's opinion, my opinion's right, and is not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your investment advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So this podcast is just for your entertainment and education only, and I hope you enjoyed it. So until next time, time to go play.